Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series on Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with a piece called Sense of Nowhere, which is a part of the competition. So this is a virtual reality interactive narrative that is a little bit more of an immersive experience in the sense that it's really designed for you to have your own experience with it rather than to hear about it. And so the paradox of this conversation is that, of course, I went through it, and I'm going to talk about it, and I'll talk a little bit about what the themes are that are being explored. But as I was talking to the creator, you know, one of her first reactions was, you know, I think you should have your own experience with it rather than for her to speak about it too in depth. So that sort of presented a bit of a challenge for how to navigate the conversation. You know, we got through it based upon my own experience that I'm reporting back. But just so you know that this is a type of experience that's really best for people to have their own experience with it, if that's possible. You know, one of the challenges obviously are that these pieces are not widely available to be able to see. And so there's this kind of like chicken and egg problem there, wider distribution for these different types of experiences. So my take on this is that it's exploring a lot of Taoist and Jungian active imagination, subconscious type of concepts and ideas. And that the whole idea was to create a bunch of associative links within the piece that are creating these symbolic and semiotic connections between these different moments. But it's really designed to evoke your own memories, your own experiences within the context of this. It feels like kind of walking into a dreamscape, but lots of different embodied interactions. And so in terms of the contextual domains, I'd say it's a lot about the dreams and unconscious and this kind of philosophically rich, surreal, dreamlike reality, and also lots of active imagination, as well as invocations of various associative links and memories. It focuses a lot on these embodied interactions and dreamlike absurd surreality and a primary catalyst to pervert our expectations. And so the primary center of gravity is the air element, because I think it's really this philosophical provocation for you to have your own associative links and memories and active imagination that it's really trying to lean into. And so it's a lot of Jungian active imagination, associative dream logic, chaos, plausibility. And I actually gained a lot of context from conducting this interview because of the meaning of the patterns, as well as how it's structured from exploring both the particles, materials, the subconscious, and then reality and illusion. So it's a type of piece that I think can be fairly sparse and abstract, but definitely worth unpacking the emerging spatial grammar and symbolic semiotic experiences that are happening. And there's also quite a lot of absurdist, surreal tone and kind of a humorous overall vibe to it that doesn't take itself too seriously. So it's trying to pervert our expectations for what to expect, but it's really trying to enter into this possibility space of exploration. So the air element's definitely at the forefront here in terms of like a type of experience that makes you think or makes you wonder or explore your own imagination. So the second center of gravity is there's a lot of interaction. So very fire element and actor presence. And so there's a lot of embodied interactive gameplay loops that are throughout the entirety of this experience, and that these interactions are very much designed to take the audience on to a bit of an introspective journey. And so again, the director was kind of resistant to speak too much about the experience because she really wanted you to have your own direct experience with it. But, you know, it helped to be able to have the conversation to dig into a little bit more of the design inspirations that were behind the different choices that she made. The third center of gravity is emotional presence, water element. So lots of different music and custom music that lots of different iterative loops that are also within the context of the experience itself of these exploratory processes, and then juxtaposed to each other throughout the course of the piece, creating a bit of an interactive montage and not really an explicit narrative, but more things for you to have your own associative links through what's being presented. And the fourth and final center of gravity is the embodied presence. So lots of different embodied actions that are really integrating this piece. But I think the most part is that it definitely feels like an overall kind of surreal and liminal imagery that you're experiencing. And some of the different archetypal themes and character, I'd say it's very much a non-Boolean and non-dual approach of trying to investigate these transcendent ideas, realms, but also looking at the interface between reality and illusion and our own perceptual sensory experience as we're relating to all these different domains of existence. And so there's a lot of associative link type of explorations within this piece. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Xing Xuan happened on Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, everyone. I'm Xing Xuan Ye. I'm from Taiwan. Before doing VR, I was an animator. and I do 2D and stop motion, so especially I enjoy the texture part of everything about animation. And later on, I step into the VR part of the world, and well, I'm still interested to put all the things I like into VR and see what will happen afterwards. So basically, that's what I did.
Great. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yes. About my background, I was always studying animation. And afterwards, I studied in European Erasmus Mundus program called Reanima. And we have 3 schools in the joint master. So we are basically still studying animation, but in Finland part, I start to think about VR and extended reality things. So from that, I start to make VR projects. But before that, I have been always an animator. Good life as an animator, actually. Yeah.
Nice. And so maybe you could give a bit more context for how the Sense of Nowhere came about.
That's a tricky thing, because I really want people to think about it by watching the projects. So for anyone asking me this question, I would say, it's a interpretable journey, but it's more or less like a thinking journey. So you follow a thread of thoughts and slowly coming back to a presence. Yes. That's a short one.
Okay, well, we have plenty more time on the podcast to dig into it much more. And I have had a chance to see it. So, well, I guess we'll skip straight to the distribution. Are you planning on distributing it and making it available for people to see? Or are you going to be doing the festival circuit? Or how can people get a hold of The Sense of Nowhere if they want to check it out?
That's the thing. I think I want the distributor to come to find me, actually. But I will try my best to submit it to all the festival first and to see if we can make it even in the different formats with more people, or maybe in a projection style or something. But I think that pretty much I still enjoy the VR formats, like the way it is as a standalone project. So yes, can I just use this microphone to tell people and tell the distributor how to find me?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, can distributor just come and you can contact me? Thank you.
Yeah, all your contact info is on the Venice website, so they can get a hold of you that way. So, yeah, so I guess, how would you pitch? Like, what is The Sense of Nowhere? Like, what is it?
To put it simply, it's a journey from nowhere to now here. So you are traveling back from you don't know where you are until you're back in the present. And you know, people think a lot and we make decisions in mind. We think about good things and bad things. And I think that's how we counting on subconsciousness was guiding us. So in Sense of Nowhere, you will be able to see different kind of situation and you will try to understand what is happening right now. And after all, you will remember something. And that something might reflect on your subconsciousness as well. So that's why you remember it. And I think this interpretable journey can be composed by different kind of people, and they can have different kind of feedback, or maybe they just find it, that's interesting. But I think the people who resonate with this experience, they might find something they want inside the experience. Yes. Yay.
Yeah, and notice in some of the write-ups that you mentioned, sort of like Jungian thought, and there's the unconscious. And so what's your connection to Jung or the unconscious?
What do you mean, Jung?
Carl Jung, yeah.
Ah, okay. Jung. Maybe I just wrongly pronounced his name. That's why I couldn't recognize his name.
I'm probably mispronouncing it, yeah.
No. About the active imagination. Actually, it's a concept I recognized like half of the way making Sense of Nowhere. I recognized it's what I was doing is really matching the idea of active imagination, that we are actively inviting the subconsciousness to come and tell us something. So that's basically pretty much the experience itself. So we are using hand gesture to invite and collect the idea But eventually you need to let go. So that's the whole process of looping everything. And we invite ideas of war, ideas of things being eaten, things like that. And everything go back and forth, looping. And it just feels like there's nothing. So, yeah. And because from the active imagination, when you finish the imagination, you're back. And what happened was so real, but it feels like nothing happened. Yeah, that's pretty much the experience I want to give. So that's why I include this idea. But that's one of the inspirations. I would say there are a lot of inspirations for these projects.
What's some of the other inspirations?
Yeah, that's a lot of things, actually, because I was making this project in a very mixed cultural backgrounds. I have a lot of colleagues from all over the world, and they have different religions, different thoughts, different beliefs. And I suddenly recognize, I'm trying to find what is the things we are in common. And I have a friend talking about her religion. I remember it was Islamic, right? And she was trying to talk something for the core idea of Islamic culture. And I recognized there's something that connected to the culture I have in Taoism and Buddhism. So I started to dive deeper from everything. And everything has some tiny connectedness with the other thing. So I was so amazed by all of that. And I was like, wow, this universe is crazy. And maybe we are talking about the same thing all the time. So that's why everything starts from the particle, because we are all from the particle. So everything is from the particle. And I forgot what was the question. I always did that when I talking about the origin of everything. What was the question? Sorry.
Oh, we were talking about your inspirations. And so.
Okay. So that was from my roots. It was Taoism and Buddhism the most. And Taoism, why it's called Taoism? Because it's from Tao. And Tao, in Mandarin, it calls the way. So pretty much when we try to describe the way, we talk about, if you can talk about, you can try to describe it, and that's not the way. So that's something uninterpretable. And Buddhism, there were a lot of concepts about things in Buddhism. And there's one thing that we call the illusion. And when I was trying to think about Taoism, the Tao, it's something you couldn't describe. And there's something in Buddhism is illusion. So maybe Tao is illusion. Illusion is the Tao. And I was like, whoa. So that's the core idea. I start from these two spots, two points, to going to the other points in different fields, physics, and the things that, quantum theory and all the stuff. That's something that messed up with my mind. But in the very end of physics, there's something you couldn't describe and you could interpret. All the scientists, we couldn't, human being couldn't yet understand it. So I was feeling everything is connected. And yeah, I was crazy at that moment trying to figure out everything. I even studied for alchemy and the other stuff and tried to purify the soul. And I was thinking maybe we were thinking and we were trying as human being, when trying to find something, trying to purify our soul, it's also similar to we're trying to thinking about an answer. And we don't know what answer is that. And I was trying to put different kinds of answer in sense of nowhere. And people can finally figure out maybe they have their own answer of what it is in the end. Yes.
Yes, lots of deep thoughts. I'm going to pull up an image that you had from your artist video that showed that you're starting with the particles and then you're going into the second layer of materials. And then the third layer of the subconsciousness, and then the fourth layer of reality, and the fifth area of illusion. So you're kind of going through these different stages that feel like chapters that you're going from one to the next. And so maybe you could talk about this journey from particles to materials to subconsciousness to reality to illusion.
I think everything is a loop. Like, it's looping. Like, we were blinking our eyes. We were breathing. We were trying to opening our hands and closing it. You're trying to grab something, and you eventually need to let go. You think of something, you eventually need to think of the other thing afterwards. So I think about looping a lot. And I was trying to include looping inside the experience. So I start to think about what's the starting point, so as it will be the ending point at the same time. So I think about particle, the smallest fundamental elements of everything. So that's why it starts with particle. And we can see all the formats, all the stuff we try to recognize, they are all composed by particle. And then it's the moment you can recognize it as you were doing a monologue or you're trying to listen to the surrounding. They were not materialized yet. You haven't put any stuff on it. And that's the music part of each chapter is also well designed by the thoughts, because in the first part we use the sound from human body. Like, it's all the sound that human can make. For me, it's like a monologue. You are talking to yourself. You are trying to know what is happening, but this zone is within you. It's only with you. And then secondly, you start to interpret it. So with the interpretation, the things with particle get materialized. They were having another layer of meaning from that part, from the sound, from everything. And then they have texture. So they have the materialized texture. They are in the second part, and they were sort of dancing in your mind, and you were thinking like, why did I think about that? And this object brought you through the third layer of subconsciousness, because why did you think about this material instead of the other material? So this material must have something to do with your memory, and why you have your associative thinking bring you here is because you have something resonate with this memory. So this memory brought you to different kinds of scenes, and that might evoke a sort of contradicted stuff inside the subconsciousness. So that's why we have the third layer of subconsciousness. And after all, you have to come back to a reality, because the sound comes back again, it interrupts you again. It's like a bus going to a stop, and they stop and all the sound disappear. So that's the moment you are coming back, and then you are in the reality. But how do you know that's the reality? Is that really the reality, like the realistic one? Or it's just another particle. Yeah.
And then you get to illusion, right?
Yeah, that's the illusion. So that's the point you will start to question, like, what was that just happened? Is that reality, or this illusion is the reality, or this reality is the illusion? So that's the part we were trying to play with that.
Nice. And that was a great overview of the kind of like chapters and the intent behind each of those. And you also are talking around how there's sounds and then the image that are interconnected, but then the combination of those is driving associative thinking. And so maybe you could talk a bit about how you use the principle of associative thinking in order to create this narrative backbone to this piece, because it's a series of associative links that you're going through the piece. It feels a little bit like you're walking through a dream and interacting with it to some extent, but maybe you could just talk about the power of associative thinking and why that was such a key part of how you like to explore using the medium of VR.
Mm-hmm. I think associative thinking is amazing. I mean, to put it shortly, because that's the part I like the most about all the projects. I will try to interpret, because maybe it's because I'm from the animation background. I really enjoy cinema language, and I love the films that you can interpret it. I don't really enjoy that much that I have a fixed narrative and the audience could only follow the author's thought. But from associative thinking, I can really try to interpret it by myself. But, well, this project is from my associative thinking. So I hope in the future I can make it more interpretable. But somehow I found like the funniest, like the playfulness part inside this. So I put all the objects that make people laugh and made me laugh as well. So, well, that's pretty much the reason I put all those stuff. And from where I start to rethink about how this can go. And there are some parts in the subconsciousness chapter that really connected to my thoughts of the world and thoughts of different kind of issues and subjects. So yeah, I hope that will resonate with some audience as well, because I think they are all very universal in a sense. And I always amazed how far I can go with my mind. Like when I was zooming out and I think of the sound of the bus, and I was thinking about, oh, there's something trembling, the sound going too far to everywhere. I think about death. I think about being alive. And yeah, that's very contradictive. And suddenly when I came back, I've realized, oh, I think about terrible things, but I'm still here. But that's all right, in a sense. So yeah, human being, we need to fight a lot and survive, but be kind to each other.
Yeah, and there's also this kind of polarity nature, you know, can't have life without death, you know, so when you have a brush with death, it makes you feel more alive. And so there's a way that alchemical thinking is all about these polarities and trying to explore that. And I think that also storytelling also has the consonants and dissonance cycles and music as well. So it feels like that you're also kind of exploring some of those polarities, especially when you talk about like reality versus illusion. You're kind of getting to the core dialectic of what's real, what's not real, and kind of using a sense of humor or absurdist, weird kind of like associative link. It feels like, you know, very dreamlike. So just curious if you take inspiration from your dreams, or, you know, this grammar of VR is very different than, say, a film. I mean, certainly there's influences of dreams into film, but I think especially with a lot of the VR pieces that I'm seeing this year in particular, kind of leaning into that kind of dream logic. So yeah, just curious to hear a little bit around dreams and the associative linking that happens in dreams and how that may influence the grammar that you're using to tell the story of the sense of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. We interpret dreams, right? And that's the thing. I think you really talk about the key points, because it really feels like a dream-like space, and there's no logic inside, maybe some of them. So you will try to know what is the logic behind it and how human mind can be so much interesting part. Well, that is, we try to make the connection. We try to think about why this scene is after the other one. There must be some reason, and that's your reason. I mean, you can think about it. Well, in the beginning, I was trying to make this project even more, it was abstract or more interpretable. So in the beginning, I was thinking the audience can choose which scene to come first, even which chapter to come first. But somehow I recognize people will get more confused with that. So I still make my choice to put orders I was thinking about. But I feel like it's just like a dream after one another. So eventually you can interpret it by yourself, because I didn't really put the narrative thread into each scene, but put some associative thinking ideas, like some elements you have seen in a previous layer of dream. So that's why I'm saying, like, dream is really a nice thing, and nice thing for the door to subconsciousness, and also the door to this one. If you are really knowing what you are doing and really trying to interpret it, you can find something, I think. I love dreams.
Yeah, and I wanted to show you one last image here, which was from your artist statement, where you were saying that this was early attempts of quote thinking when you were thinking about the sense of nowhere. And there's a lot that's going on in there. I didn't know if this image was being translated into the ultimate experience of the sense of nowhere, but maybe you could describe what's going on in this image and how it ties into the end product of the sense of nowhere.
Yes, actually this image is a self-portrait. So it's a self-portrait of myself, and I drew it actually a diary of mine. I have like pretty much a lot of booklets that is for solely for diaries. And this one is actually with a lot of very messy, like the pencil lines and also a lot of colors, but you can still see a person's face on the image. And what I say, in the background, I use my name stamp, so you can see actually my name. On the top, I was stamping all the way around the face and all the imagery. So I'm thinking about myself because it's a self-portrait, but at the same time, thinking about all the other things around me. So being an individual, at the same time being part of the world, sometimes it's like a tremendous horror movie for me. I sometimes feel like, oh, why am I here? Like this kind of existential stuff. But I have to force myself back to this tiny person box. So I would like to, like in the beginning when I make this picture, I actually thinking maybe that's how the experience will about. It's all about thinking. I'm really amazed by how people can think and how all the thoughts can create the decisions we made in life. So, yes. And for all the thoughts, all the ideas, I wanted to create different kinds of scenes that people can actually rethink about their own reality. Yeah.
Yeah, there seems to be like the sense of nowhere is like, as a title, we're usually somewhere, we usually have some context. And so as you step into this experience, you're really trying to, in some ways, deconstruct all these common reference points. And it's really disorienting in a way to put people in a place where it doesn't have any reference. And you're kind of throwing logic out the window in the sense of like, it doesn't make logical sense. And so you're creating a series of associative links that then your brain is wanting to make an answer as to what's happening. But it seems to also be on a track where that's the point to maybe deconstruct that process and get to a point where it's no longer about the thinking.
Mm-hmm. You are totally right. I mean, I was trying to not do the traditional narrative because I think if people can rethink inside the experience, that would be a lot of fun. So I was trying to force people to think, but sometimes I might fail. Because I recognize some people might just, they need the experience to tell them what they should know. And I was like, no, you should think. So, yeah, might not for everyone, but I felt that some people might find it interesting because they find maybe only visual, but maybe not only visual. If they find something that somehow resonates with their own life, then yes. That's the thing for Lan.
Mm-hmm. And so when you were in the process of creating this experience, did you ever have like a script or a plan? Or was it more of a iterative process where you reach a point and then you try to think about what comes next after that? More of a from moment to moment, seeing where it leads you. So just trying to get a sense of how you put this together.
Okay. Actually, I was trying to write a script and I failed. Because it's so hard to write a script. Like from my animation background, I never write script. I just draw. And I think drawing, I'm more like a image driven person. So if I feel stuck, I always draw something like draw. And the image I was trying to introduce to everyone, like the portrait, I really feel like something was slowly soft after that portrait because I recognize myself actually trying to talk about how people was thinking, like how far can thinking go? Yeah. And how everything you were thinking can just be nothing. That sort of is the idea. Even though the audience was trying to do the thinking during the process, they might just recognize, oh, it's also nothing. Like it's like another layer things. But yes, I don't really write script because I think it's not suitable also for this project. I let the mind, like all the left ideas that was left in my mind to tell me what to do. So that's pretty much like the active imagination practice from drawing. So Yes, I let my subconsciousness to tell me what is going to happen and how do I feel if this happened, like for the plot. And I find the things that move me the most. And then I write it down like as like a tiny sentence or something, and I draw something and have fun. I like the part having fun the most. I like having fun during the process, and this is the top priority, to have the playfulness inside my project. I need to have fun. I need to play. And that's all the things. Yes.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of like interactive components in the very beginning of the piece where you kind of have two gestures that are like almost like the yang and the yin, where there's energy that you're sending out and controlling, and then there's more of a receptive, so you're kind of almost like a push and pull that happens. And so maybe you could describe this sort of polarity that you're playing with in order to guide yourself through the series of different interactions in this particle world that you start off the experience in.
Yes. These two gestures are actually have some inspiration from Hinduism's mudra. So it's like you do a hand gesture when you are meditating.
So you're like putting your hands down with connecting your thumb to your index finger and creating like a different mudra, yeah.
Yes, that's that kind of mudra. And when I was doing it, because I was talking about this project is an interpretable project, right? So I'm also thinking about the hand gesture should be also interpretable during the experience. In the beginning, I was trying different kind of gesture. I also trying to do this like a okay gesture. But you know, in metta, it's a gesture to leave the experience, so we couldn't just change the history. So we abandoned that. And there's another, like plan B, is doing this like a praying gesture, like put your hands together, put your palms together, and like worshiping gesture. But this one, I also abandoned it because it's a little bit too religious, I would say. So in a sense, I chose two. The first one is like with your hands, to put your hands together, aligned. And it's like some people will say it's like begging for something, but it's actually a mudra called Pushpabuddha. It has meaning of a handful of flowers, a gesture of receiving. So I also amazed by how people saying now it's like you are begging for something. But that's the interesting part of interpretation. So you can also interpret it as a different formats in different culture, and you will also experience it in sense of nowhere, like you were doing different gesture in different situation. It means different things. And also the second gesture is you put into like a fist, like two fists together. It's a gesture called Adi. It means it's the first gesture inside when we were still inside mother's womb. We were holding our hands like that, and we were trying to receiving something. And I found these two gestures very meaningful, and at the same time, they were very beautiful as well. They also have a lot of meaning when we were trying to defend ourselves. We were trying to hold on to much. Opening hands, we are trying to giving, or we are trying to beg. We are trying to receiving something. And I just found so much fun inside those interpretable elements. And yeah, so that's why in the end I chose these two, because I found there were a lot of explanation you can go with these two gestures. And overall, that's a gesture when I was thinking I would do. I look in my hands, I feel like a lot of choices were actually within my hands. I was making choices. Yeah, that's me.
Nice. And I'd love if you could maybe elaborate on both the sound design and the music, because that seemed to be such a core part of this experience, where you, in your artist video, you have a lot of like foley of creating the sound effects, but also the music feature the composer having a few words around like the different types of styles for each of these different levels that seem very distinct and unique. And so, yeah, I'd love it if you can talk a bit about the sound design as well as the process of adding music to this piece.
Yes. For this part, I have amazing team. So I have the sound designer, Uber, and the music composer Sherwin, they were super amazing. And at the same point, like in the very beginning, I was talking with them and saying, I want the human body sound. And they were so like, no, like how? But I told them, actually, I was trying to mimic the bus with human and with the instruments, like because they all represent like for the first part and the second part of the piece. Like the first part, I was talking about like particle, and I told earlier about this monologue within individual. So that's why the first part is with the human body sound, and it sounds a little bit more without the environment. Like you couldn't really feel the environmental sound. There's no ambience sound. But in the second part, you are interpreted. So we use instrument, because instruments are actually how people trying to interpret things. So we use instrument as the element to put the second layer along with the material world. So that's why the second layer is the instrument. And the third part is the subconsciousness. They were two sounds overlap. You can sometimes hear your personal sound, like from human, and you can sometimes hear the sound from instrument, because that's how your mind is trying to talk with the world, and the world was trying to talk with the subconsciousness. So that's the interaction between human and the materialized world. So that's why this part is overlapping. So yeah, the sound, we also think a lot about these parts.
Yeah, because you were talking around active imagination, that's sort of like a way of, it's not quite like lucid dreaming, but it is a, like a form of, you know, tapping into your imagination or your dreams and another portal into your unconscious. And so you've sort of created a dreamlike state. And if you were to read and interpret this experience as one of your own dreams, are there ways that you find that you got messages for yourself in the process of creating this work? And I'm just curious if you thought about that and what kind of insights you might have gotten for the process of making The Sense of Nowhere.
Like what I say, I think I recognize how horrible and how good I can be. Like when I think about eating, being eaten, or hurting or being hurt, that's the thing I was amazed how human mind can go. Yeah, when I was making this piece, I recognized I have so many things to tell. But in the end, I have to put the emotion eventually. Like I want people to feel the emotion instead of the events. Because the events can vary in a sense. We are all from different cultural backgrounds, but there are something in common. That's the emotion. So I was trying to put different kinds of emotion in different scenes and trying to find something that we are all connected in a sense also for the emotion. Yes.
Yeah, I think part of my emotion of going through the piece was a bit of awe and wonder, but also kind of like a WTF, like where is this going? What's happening? But it sounds like that might have been by design.
Yes. I want people to feel like what is happening right now. And they will figure it out by themselves. That's the interesting part.
Great. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling might be and what it might be able to enable?
From the old projects I saw in Venice here, I actually recognize there are huge possibility among everything. And for my personal point of view, I really want to extend the photogrammetric models into like a bigger formats and the other stuff. And I mean, we like toys, we like puppets, and it will be much more fun if we can interact with them, and maybe they can get bigger or we get smaller and things like that. So yes, but that's my own aim. And I think in the virtual reality in the future, well, I hope it can be lighter in a sense, like physically, so people can watch it easier. But I mean, because this is also my first VR project, so I'm pretty much still exploring the idea of VR narration and VR storytelling. I'm a storyteller, so I'm more into the storytelling part. Sorry for the other part. And I'm still diving, not very deep, but I will try to dive deeper. And next project probably will make something more narrative, because the first project, I was thinking maybe I won't make VR ever again. So I will make anything I like and I put it inside VR. But the second project, I'm pretty much thinking this can be one of the method of creating art. So I'm thinking about to explore it better for a format. So the next project will probably be more VR narration stuff. But I will try to make it hand tracking as well because I like to see my own heads.
You said that you're a storyteller at heart, and then there's the other part, and sorry about that part. What did you mean by that?
Sorry about that part. It means there are all the other parts I couldn't do. Because there are so many things I saw here, like more like a collective installation. I would like to do that in the future, but not now. Or maybe more dancey installation. I enjoy that part as well. But yes, I'm pretty much in my tiny circle right now and trying to make it bigger in a way, so I won't be too greedy to say I would like to make room scale in 50. 50 people will participate. I couldn't. So I knew my own limitation, but I also trying hard to make it less. So yes, I will do it step by step, and hopefully, yes, I can finally reach something more interesting in the future.
And is there anything else that you want to either experience, or that you create yourself, or that you want to experience something within VR that you'd like to do or like to see?
You mean in project sense?
Yeah, just like what kind of things do you want to experience in VR?
I want to eat something. Like if I can eat something in VR and if I can see how I digest it, I would be happy though. Or I can have a dinner with someone. I think that would be a lot of fun. I mean, there are so many things to do with that. But if I can really eat or touch something, I mean, yes, that would be much more immersive. Yeah, I think eat something.
There's certainly been VR projects that have incorporated eating, certainly been a part of the installation. So yeah, there's only so much you can do with just VR alone. And yeah, is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community? Any final thoughts?
I would like to thank everyone in the team and also thanking for all the warm support and all the people who came to just say something like, just like what you say, they don't know what they watch. They were just like, what? But in the end, they were feeling like, but it was fun. And I was like, okay, then that's all you have to know. Yes. And I think for the VR community, I feel very warm in a sense because I jumped from animation to this part. Maybe not too much difference in a sense, but I feel like VR community is that people were always trying to see what is new. And this sort of drive and very vivid community really makes me feel, ooh, I'm ready to go. Like, I'm ready to go anywhere. And that's a fun part for me as well. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and thanks for joining me here on the podcast and talking a bit more about Sense of Nowhere. It's quite a unique experience that went in directions that I had no idea where it was going to go next, and kind of unpredictable in that sense. And yeah, I'm just glad to have a chance to sit down with you to hear a bit more around the thinking behind the project, because it's, you know, a lot of ideas and thoughts. And if people don't get a chance to actually see it, then hopefully by listening to our conversation, they get a bit of a sense of a vibe and a feel of who you are and what kind of stuff that you're creating for folks. So yeah, thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun talking. I hope I haven't talked too much. And I want to thank most fully for my team and all the people who support and all the inspirations I get, because like, you are amazing. I hope I didn't misuse you. And and yes. And thanks for all the people along the way and all the friends that kindly provide your thoughts on this piece. I really would like to share this project with more people as possible. And I believe in the ultimate peace in everything. So I hope you can find peace as well. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage, and hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals, and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so I really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also, it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.